Ian Basarabi, the future of work. A very, very good morning. Welcome back to studio.
Thank you, Howard. Good morning.
So, social anxiety.
Yes.
In the workplace.
Yes.
That's a real, real concern and problem, and it has a greater impact than we think it has.
Absolutely. So just to explain what social anxiety is because many people don't actually know what it is. I posted it's a tongue-in-cheek example, but it really sums it up nicely. I posted it on Facebook, and I'll reshare it on Twitter afterwards. But just to give you a practical example is when we go out and we say hi to a stranger, what we think will happen is they go home and make fun of us to all their friends. What would actually happen is they say hi back. So that's kind of like, that's an extreme example.
Yeah,
and what it means is we are sometimes our worst critics, because we kind of don't step up. We don't step out and just act because we're concerned. We feel we're shy. Some people say, I'm shy. It's not you shy. You just feel uncomfortable doing certain things in a social environment. And it's become such an important thing that we actually destroy ourselves internally sometimes. And I literally mean destroy ourselves is because we actively think how much control we have over all these things. And we're all disappointed in when we look back and we think of how much time we wasted worrying about things that are out of our control. Like you'll get home at the end of the day and you'll think, oh my word, why did I stress so much about that presentation? Or why did I stress so much about that meeting? Or why did I stress so much about that interview? It wasn't so bad. And that is how we actually condition ourselves. We condition ourselves to be fearful, in an environment where it's not that bad, but it is real, and that is to say that we have to on both sides, and I'm saying about how do we manage our own social anxiety, but more important, how do we manage people that do have social anxiety in the workplace? So a perfect example is, let's give it a name, David calls in sick on days he's supposed to give a presentation. Now, our immediate response to that is, well, David, he just lets us down, and you just make it worse, or you have somebody who has great ideas, but they only communicate those through email. And you say, oh, well, why don't they just come and like tell us about it? And I guess the third one for me, which I've observed, is that some people actually come out and say, I'm anxious. I can't do it.
Interesting.
And we say, oh, just like,
come on.
Just come on. Like, come you on. Know, you like push people through it. And the reality is if you look, and I encourage our listeners to please look out there and think about the people you come across every day in your work environment, that have social anxiety. They may not be displaying behaviors, but you might pick it up straight away that they do have social anxiety. So the whole reason we discuss this is because the cool thing about social anxiety is people that have social anxiety are actually some of the best people in your organization because they bring a vital kindness and humanity to the office. It's interesting. If you look at these people, that's a positive trait of them. And, if you look past the fact that they care about what people think, you'll find that simply they care about people. And every workplace in this day and age can certainly benefit from that. The other thing is that socially anxious people are actually sometimes your best performers because they're perfectionists. They're meticulous about what they do. So look at it as in the positive, and the most important thing is how to help people. And the big question people say to me is, do we bring up the behaviors we are noticing in others? And that's a very, it's a tough question because I think, is it appropriate to turn around and say, oh, Howard, you're always so shy. You know what I mean? Why don't you say hello to people when you know, that kind of thing? And the answer I give is only start a discussion when the shyness or social anxiety is getting away in the person's career or is negatively impacting others. So if you're not saying hello to somebody and that comes across as offensive to the other person, then it could be a problem.
That's when it's time to deal with it, right? And it's so interesting because we often talk about the stories we have in our own heads.
Yeah.
And that's what this is about. A shy person often has that story, exactly as you said. You know, I'm going to go home and they're going to laugh at me for trying to say hello because I'm such, you know, so awkward or something, or you know, I don't have hair. But the reality is that's your own story.
Absolutely. And it's your own view on the world. It's your own perception of the world. And I think the most important thing is we try and force people to conform to our ideas, which is also wrong, because what we do is we try and convince people that they need to conform to what our idea of normal is. What is normal behavior? I don't think anybody can define what normal behavior is. So what you need to do is you need to embrace these people. Like if somebody's sitting in the corner, and you and I have had this discussion many times, when you write articles, you like to sit in a noisy place because it stimulates you.
Right.
On the other hand, I cannot concentrate when there's an immense amount of noise. So we have to support like introverts who wear headphones in the office because that is how they cope. Manage themselves and cope. You know, it's also like people that sit at their desk and recharge their batteries instead of saying, oh, come and sit outside and socialize. Sometimes people just actually need their own time. Maybe they're on the phone the whole day, and for an hour they actually get to be with themselves. That's not wrong. I think it's about understanding what people's triggers are and what causes them. And for me, it's all about a conversation. It's also taking people along for the journey. So if you engage and if you communicate with people, you end up having a far better in environment that is one where have a discussion. Like if I said to you, Howard, I'd like you to do a presentation in front of 1,000 people and you turn around and you say, look, and I'm just really not comfortable. I'm saying, okay, that's okay. Yeah, why only 1,000? I only do F&B Stadium, you know? The thing is, if you don't feel comfortable, I'll say, well, would you mind then not doing the presentation, but would you MC? Or will you moderate
So you find
the balance and then you say to the person, look, okay, well, fine, Howard, if you don't want to talk.
Well, I guess the question is this, is does it limit your career in any specific environment? And obviously each one's different.
Yeah.
If you need to be a person, if your career demands that you have to be able to stand up and speak, then the best way to do it is obviously to provide support for that person, maybe training, and to give them the confidence, along with the skill to be able to do so. If it's not, and if it's unimportant really that they ever present or they ever talk, speak in public, then I guess it's just a matter of respecting it. Unsigned says, yes, kindness, caring about your listeners, Howard. Please stop playing the helicopter song. It's upsetting people.
Wow. Giving them social anxiety.
There we go.
I actually love how you've approached this topic, because at first I thought that you were going to tell us how to overcome it. But I love that you've gone and said, actually, people are different and some people will have social anxiety and maybe it's not something that people can overcome. So how do we make them comfortable in, you know, whatever setting?
Isn't it true that we all have social anxiety?
Yep.
Even if we appear not to have it.
Yeah.
You know, I remember having this conversation with one of my kids who was quite anxious about going to a party or to an event. And the way in which I described it to them was, we've all got that. It's sometimes a bigger part of our heart, and sometimes it's a smaller part. But we all feel it. There's none of us, I believe, who walk into an environment completely a new social environment, for example, without any form of anxiety. And my advice is, well, if you have to do it, and sometimes you do, and very often we do, is take that part and say to yourself, you know what? I know that this is that part of you. I know you're there. I know you're feeling anxious. We'll address this later. I've just got to do what I've got to do. And then maybe later come back to it. In fact, not maybe. You must come back to it.
Absolutely.
And say to yourself, okay, let's address that. Why was I feeling that? What was that part of me? But we all have it. It's just sometimes it's great and sometimes it's smaller.
So the interesting thing, and you mentioned kids, Howard, and I think that's something that we all face, and it'll be interesting to hear from the listeners what they think, is that when somebody comes forward with social anxiety, what we wanted to do immediately is we want to accommodate them. And there's an urge to be a protector. We want to protect them. So like if your kid wakes up in the morning and they've got an exam and they've got a stomach ache and you say, okay, we'll stay home. You know what I mean?
It's like, right.
That might feel good. Or to opt out of the training if you're not feeling like going to the training. But the reality is that short-term accommodation can be useful, but over the long term, there's a fine line between accommodating and enabling. You know, and if you enable someone to say, well, every time I'm in a stressful situation, I'm going to get a stomach ache, and then my dad gave me permission, I can opt out of everything in life and avoid it. So, and the thing is to support them in facing their fears and at their own pace is far more productive than granting ongoing permission to opt out, like giving the sick note, you know, like, okay, you can stay at home. Because if you say, okay, well, let's see, how do we address it and speak about it? You know, don't ignore the fact that the kid is feeling anxious. Address it and say, are you feeling anxious because of the exam? So let's work through the issue rather than just stay at home and feel better.
We did have this conversation with David Abrams, and it was quite interesting.
Okay.
And what he said, Zanati, correct me if I'm relaying this incorrectly, but what he said was that these kids actually do feel the pain.
Yeah.
It comes from the anxiety, there's no question. And I think, and the answer is to do exactly what you're saying, is to speak about it and to understand and identify it. But they are really feeling it. It is 8:22. I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 061-895-1019. We're talking the future of work. We're talking about social anxiety at work. Karen says, just a thought, worry is a waste of time. Prayer is better. I think that does work for a lot of people. I don't know that it works for everyone. This is your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM. We're chatting the future of work. We're talking about social anxiety in the workplace. And that song gave you social anxiety.
Yeah, I'm still feeling quite anxious, I must say. But
he gets nervous.
I get very nervous. Like, I'm so scared when Howard moves across to his rogue laptop. It's like, do you get excited or nervous, Anati?
Very nervous.
Very nervous. Okay. Well, that's good. But at least we deal with it. We discuss it. You know,
we're very open about these things. Yeah. And I see that most people love it. Hey?
Yeah. Well, that's the way. You know, like. You know, statistics can be spun anyway, Howard.
Howard, I know you want people to respect you, so respect others who ask you to stop playing the German song. I did not ask for respect. When? Did I?
I also don't remember.
You don't remember asking for that at all.
You've never asked for respect.
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm sorry. Did we have a misunderstanding somewhere?
I think so. Cross lines.
I crossed the line absolutely, absolutely ages ago. I don't even know if I had a line.
Yeah, no.
And unsigned, if you think this is bad, try living with me. You know, just spare a thought for all of those who have to deal with me on a...
Howard, I'm worried somebody's going to come through and tell you that you're sensitive, you know?
No, I doubt it.
I doubt it.
Linda says, thank you, Howard. I'm learning to embrace all music, global, world, and all. And by the way, I'm not anonymous. All right, and that is Linda. Thank you. Thank you, Linda. All right, it's about to go 8:30. Let's take news headlines. After that, I want to continue with this conversation with Ed Basarabi, the future of work. Very, very interesting indeed.
In your headlines, ceasefire reported between Israel and Islamic Jihad. Israeli authorities have warned that the fighting could erupt again. Belgian city says anti-Semitic carnival was just fun. The parade featured caricatures of Orthodox Jews. Pilchard's recall widens. A regulator has ordered the removal of certain brands of tinned pilchards from shelves. And security company delivers meals to homes. This is after residents in Hoek KZN were sent into darkness unexpectedly. Catch the full bulletin at the top of the hour.
Time is 8:30. About to go 8:31. Dorf says German and Jewish music, tune into Chai FM, and that's what you get. I think the only thing missing now is some Islamic music. That is absolutely true, Dorf, and I am going to rectify it. I'm not a particular expert on Islamic music, but certainly the point is well made, and I will do what I can to rectify that. Thank you very, very much for that very constructive suggestion.
So Howard, since you've become so skilled with your Afrikaans music, I have no doubt that you'll succeed. And
I will. I absolutely love gospel music.
Mm-hmm.
I have a thing for choirs. I love gospel music. I think that we can enjoy music of all different cultures. Why not? I don't even understand. Genuinely don't understand how music from another culture could be deemed offensive to anybody. If the music is rubbish,
yes,
that's a different story. Yeah. And I admit some of our music is real rubbish. that I play. I'm not, I'm not so arrogant as to say all of my music is good. But Anyway, so that is but I do find it fascinating that music of another culture could be deemed offensive by people.
So I'm fascinated by this because it kind of links back to the topic we're talking about. As we walk around with our own mindsets, and I think embracing different music doesn't mean that you have to like it. It's just listening to it, and so for me, it's fascinating. Why would that guy write that song, "I'm Broke"? What is he appealing to? Is he just sharing a personal message? Is it real? Or is he just trying to have fun? But for me, it doesn't mean I have to, like you say, listen to it every day on my playlist. But if you look at things from a different perspective and you just listen and you embrace the diversity and the fact that that is such an important aspect of our lives these days. Yet and this goes back to our opening comments about what we spend so much time trying to control and what we actually should be focusing on. You know, I use the example with a lot of people. If scientists had spent all their time trying to defy gravity, if they had to spend hours and hours trying to basically debunk it and all of this stuff and say it doesn't exist. Think of how much scientific research time would have been wasted and how much we wouldn't have advanced. Yet what we do is we accept that gravity is a reality and we work around it and we say, well, like, okay, I'm not going to put the glass in midair and defy gravity and say, I can beat this. What you do is you put the glass on the table and you say, if I put it on the table, it's not going to hit the ground. It's the same about looking at life and saying, I can't control the music Howard's playing.
But Howard can't even.
Howard can't, you know.
You have to understand. I've got this little juke in me and I'm playing weird music.
And that's Howard. But don't agonize over it. You know, and I know we're having a bit of fun here talking about the music, but I think it's what people wake up in the morning and we all have.
No, look, I don't think anyone's really serious.
I think everyone's joking. Yeah.
Everybody loves Helicopter. Yeah. No, this person's only joking.
No, they are joking. Yeah, they are. Yeah.
No, it's definitely not. Yeah, I see. Yeah, there's a few people. You are twisting everything, as you well know. All right, well, there you have it. Please play. Please Don't Touch My Plums by Goldie Hawn.
Wow.
I told him no. He says the kids are at school. M says, let's lighten up about other language songs. And AJ says the music is not rubbish, but Chai is a Jewish station. Let's stay with the confines of that, as defined by whom, I do wonder. Alright, so there we go. Time is 8:35. Lots and lots of thoughts on that, but that's a conversation that we definitely can keep having. We will keep having it because obviously I will keep playing
absolutely
different music.
You're not going to stop.
No. And if anybody does, anyway. Right. So there you have it. Let's go back to social anxiety. And the truth is I am not particularly qualified because I do get it. And I do believe that all of us suffer from we feel it from time to time. But as somebody who doesn't really understand why somebody doesn't greet, you know, I understand someone's upset with something, why they don't greet, that's obvious. But if I walk past somebody and they don't particularly know me or I'm in a work environment, I'll always try and greet, catch somebody's eye and greet. But I find that actually makes people quite uncomfortable sometimes.
Yeah.
What does somebody who doesn't have social anxiety do with that?
So I think the key thing for me is to understand, and I always say it's not always about you. I always say it starts with you, which is very different to saying it's not always about you. So for example, to give your to work on your example, if you walk past somebody and you greet them with good intention and all of that and they don't respond. What we typically do in a framework of social anxiety is we would immediately say, well, what have I done to that person?
I can't believe they're not doing that. So rude.
So the thing is that you cannot, judge a person by their behavior or what they do. And you can't then go and assume a million things and come upstairs and say, do you know I greeted so-and-so downstairs and they didn't? Mm. Because then you make a whole thing. You don't know whether the person genuinely was like thinking way out there, was daydreaming, never even saw you or had a moment before that kind of distracted them. So it had nothing to do with what you did.
And we all do that. I did this yesterday. Is somebody said hello to me. I didn't even see them. I walked straight past them. There was no one else there. It was not possible that I didn't see them, but I didn't because I was so deep in my own head.
Yeah.
And I'm generally not like that. Mm. But it was potential that, you know, that person would have definitely perceived me as being rude.
Yeah. And that would be the approach. So rather than assuming that the person had an issue with you, rather address that person and say, go up to the person and say, are you feeling okay? Or the next time you see them, say, are you feeling okay? Or how are you feeling? Because the person may turn around and say, you know what, I'm actually having a really rough time. And you can say, well, I observed that because when I walked past you the other day, you seem to be very consumed in your own thoughts. Mm. Now, what that does is, first of all, you're acknowledging the person. You're not judging them. It's very different from judging. You don't turn around and say, oh, Howard, you were so miserable yesterday. You walked straight past me in Melrose and didn't greet me. That's offensive. But whereas if you can say, I observed that you looked like you were very consumed, it puts a different perspective. So there's two things. I think we're all socially anxious.
Mm. Mm.
And we don't always look, we always kind of say, well, if a person doesn't want to stand up and make a speech, or a person doesn't want to be the center of attention in a room. But I've seen instances. I attended a presentation once by Richard Branson, and he was off cuff. He was the most socially anxious person I've ever seen in my life. And I was like surprised. You know, when he's prepped and he's in the moment, he's a great speaker. But put the guy on the spot and ask him questions, the guy falls apart. And I mean that with the utmost respect, from the point that social anxiety affects people in different ways. Some people are not that emotionally intelligent, if I can say that, to deal with feelings, as an example. So if somebody walks into an office and says to the manager, closes the door and says, I'm having a nervous breakdown or I'm having an issue, they go into panic mode, and then they'll probably assign them a whole bunch of work. You know what I mean? And that's like kind of their default reaction. And the point is that, and I love going back to your point that you said about you had the discussion with one of your kids about going to a party. And what I would say to people is, because this will have huge implications in later life, is that if you're going to a party, just relax, have fun, and don't worry so much. You know, we worry about so many things that are not in our control. And if you're going to sit down with your kids, say to them, think about it, reflect, just pause and reflect and say, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? And if that's the worst thing, how bad is it really? And think about trying to put positive things into their minds. So say to your kids, well, what will you talk about? Who's going to be there? What happens if no one talks to me? What if you don't know anyone? Then go and talk to someone. Find someone there who's also not talking. So I say those because when you go into later life, and a perfect example, and I'm sure listeners will resonate with that, is that what people do is, because they don't want to interact, they'll arrive for a meeting late or like on the dot, you know? And that's kind of your like default mode, because you go in and you think, well, if I get there just before the meeting starts, I don't actually have to socialize with everyone. And then what happens is you actually make it worse, is because you sit down and you're already anxious. You're already anxious. You're sitting down there. And then when you do want to say something during the meeting, you can't do it because
you're so overwhelmed.
So the reality is, and counterintuitively, the trick is to arrive 10 to 15 minutes early. This way you'll be able to meet people as individuals and you will look less intimidating, because remember, we also cast a shadow. So we walk in there and we think, Ian comes into a meeting. He's always the last person to arrive. He comes in very like stern and tight. I can't approach that guy. So what you do is you actually create that barrier.
Very, very interesting. I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 061 0891-895-1019. It is 8:41. Good morning. Time is 8:47, about to go 8:48. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. Joining us in the studio is Ian Bassarabi. We're talking the future of work, and we're talking about social anxiety. Where does it all start? Obviously, there's no there's not one answer for everybody, but I would imagine that anxious children make anxious adults.
Absolutely, Howard, and there's definitely a lot of research and proof that overprotective parents, their behavior can often be difficult to see because it's often confused as being a loving parent. So we sometimes say, oh, they're such caring and considerate parents, but they're actually being overprotective. And the consequences of preventing your kids from having interactions with other peers, or making a kid afraid of their shadow, is pretty worrying, and it definitely carries on into adulthood. So if you've had an overprotective parent, chances are that your experience of your own self could be filled with shame and doubt. So you lack that confidence. And I think there's definitely a confidence element and a link to social anxiety. Because you doubt yourself in the sense that you're not sure if you're capable of taking on a big bad world. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have to get away from this. It's a difficult one because we also need to be sensitive to how we explain things to our kids and all that, but we can't shy away from them, and they're going to get access to this information anyway. So as an example, I was sharing with you off air is that the coronavirus is serious. It's a serious topic, but there's a reality attached to this. Mm. And if we turn to our kids and we, without any, like, if I can say, authority or knowledge, if we turn around kids and say, don't worry, we're going to be okay.
We're not in South Africa. We're all going to die if it comes here.
Yeah.
I mean, is that social anxiety?
I think, Howard, you're causing social anxiety. Okay. So that's why I was kind of hinting at being a little bit. Maybe. Well,
is he reprimanding me in a very sensitive and subtle way?
I'm being diplomatic.
Well, what are you saying, Ian?
I'm saying, Howard, you're causing a, you're causing a pandemic amongst the Chai FM listeners. If you thought your messages were rough before, they're going to get worse. But that's the thing. You know, we can't turn around and give promises to our kids that the world is going to be a perfect place. You know, nobody came into this world with a certificate that said life was going to be easy. Mm. Nobody got a guarantee or an entitlement to an easy life. But at the same time, the best way is to make our kids, aware of the big bad world or the reality of the world, and to equip them rather with the skills to deal with that. So there's nothing wrong with being a loving parent, but there's also definitely something wrong with being an overprotective parent. It's because, as I've always said to my kids, I'm not always going to be around there for you. You need to be in situations where you're going to have to manage your own anxiety, and it's about accepting that, as you were saying earlier, we're all anxious. Mm-hmm. We all have different forms of anxiety, and we express them in different ways. And that's where the respect part comes. So if a person comes out and says, I am socially anxious, have the discussion with them. Be their champion. Don't be their kind of like...
Oh, it'll be all right, and don't think of, think of unhappy thoughts.
Absolutely. Mm. And it's about a collaborative... For me, it's very much about a collaborative discussion. And manage the stuff in a way that it has a positive take on it. Is that put it in like a perspective. We do a lot of things with strengths and weaknesses, and I do the same with control and not control. We put all our strengths into a circle, and we put our weaknesses outside of the circle. And I say focus on the circle. And it's the same thing with things you can control. Wake up in the morning and think about what you can control. You can control your attitude. You can control how you respond to situations. You can't control the weather. So if it's going to rain, it's going to rain. Work around that. You know what I mean? Make a plan, because then you can deal with it. But if you go in thinking that you can change a situation, or thinking that things are, you know, there's that thing about Chicken Little where they say the sky's falling. That's not reality. So don't go in and say, well, I'm going to do this presentation, and it's going to be an absolute shocker.
Right. So part of it to me is, and I know that when I've had this experienced many times when mentoring people is that you can often take that person to back to a place in their childhood, and obviously that's not what mentoring is necessarily about, but very often what's holding them back is a voice and a sentence.
Mm.
And very often that sentence will have come from a critical parent or an overprotective parent. And that word, that sentence almost becomes iconic, very much part of the person's thought process. So they'll have a sentence that says, you know what, you never work hard enough, or, you know, you do A, B, C, or D. But that stays with them. Mm. And in their most anxious moments, whether they're remembering that conversation or it's just been built and rebuilt and rebuilt in their mind, that is a sentence that is defining them from an anxiety perspective. And it's quite important to actually understand where that social anxiety comes from. Because by understanding it and saying, my father was really scared of everything. He would catastrophize everything. Mm. Well, if you do that, then that's going to happen and that's going to happen and that's going to happen. Basically he was an accountant that's how you've learned to see things. Anytime something goes wrong, we go back to the voice of the father, who was this person who would have anticipated everything that goes wrong. And that becomes part of, and that's what the struggle is for people who suffer from social anxiety and other types of anxiety, is trying to work through that to say, you know, that's who he was or is. But actually that doesn't even need to be who I am, because he actually wasn't always right. Mm. So yes, on 5 occasions, he was absolutely right. He predicted doom and gloom and it happened, but he actually predicted it every single day of his life and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So it's as you spoke about contextualizing and understanding what that whole big picture is about.
Absolutely, Howard. And I think the thing is that we need to accommodate we need to sometimes accommodate different viewpoints. And when I say you need to accommodate the viewpoints, and that's why I always say, don't be a protector, be a champion. If you want to be a protective and a loving parent, be their champion. And what I'm saying about that is, ask your kids or ask people around you what they want to accomplish. And ask them where they currently are and where do they want to be, you know, because we never ask a person your journey. Where are you on your journey? And if we just stopped and said, ask those fundamental questions, what can you do to help them achieve those goals, rather than trying to achieve your own goals through them?
Absolutely right. So Nati, you were saying before, some techniques, like when you go for an audition, that must be incredibly scary for anybody.
Listen, it is. We all have anxiety when we go for auditions, acting, presenting, whatever. But another actor once said to me that you need to own the space. So when you go inside an audition room, get there early and then come in and just walk around a bit so that you feel that the space is yours. And then you can actually even go to the judges to actually assert some sort of control over what you're feeling and, you know, greet them, have a conversation with them, shake hands, so that you can literally feel your own presence in that room and make it your own. Yeah.
It's so interesting, because that does give you that power.
It does,
it gives you that the confidence over that space.
Exactly, it really does. Now listen, I love the fact that you've actually said that, you know, don't try to protect your kids from the world, because things are going to happen, so rather just equip them. It actually reminds me of this quote that says, God never said that the weapons wouldn't form, he just said they wouldn't prosper.
I like that.
Yeah.
Wow. That is brilliant.
Awesome. That's absolutely awesome.
Yep.
So, there you have it. 345-109 or 061-895-1019. Ian, before I let you go, some takeaway points, for somebody who might be suffering from social anxiety.
So the most important thing.
In the workplace.
Yes, absolutely. Look, this is very much in the workplace, is that be confident and comfortable to speak about it. And this is where I talk about it starts with you. It starts with you, is that if you walk around, and we spoke about what your body language and how that's your area of expertise, but if you walk around moping around and being negative, people not going to turn around and say, oh, Howard, are you socially anxious? They're going to assume different things. They're going to go, oh, Howard never wants to be at work. He always walks in. He's grumpy and all of that. So verbalize what you are feeling. It's very important. If you are feeling anxious, if somebody gives you a task, be comfortable to turn around and say, you know what, I'd love to do that, but I don't feel like I've got the confidence to do that. So help me to become a better speaker. So let's work on it together. And if you're feeling like really like you can't speak to anyone, the reality is just speak and speak to someone who will listen. And
because sometimes that anxiety is overwhelming.
Well, that's the thing. And sometimes just speaking about it is important. So reach out if you can't speak to your boss or anyone. Phone the Chai FM helpline, 0800-242436. And share it. Sometimes just sharing it.
So people can reach out for that sort of thing.
Absolutely. The volunteers there are widespread in their diversity, and they can help you get through these challenges.
And anxiety, actually, we know that anxiety and depression are quite closely linked.
Very much so.
So address it.